This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to the Brit Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We are talking about BWS this week. You want to know what that is? I can give you a tip. Only dinosaurs know what that is. And I have a dinosaur. I'm talking to one. So you're a toad and a dinosaur, Barry.
Because it's got the letters BS in it, doesn't necessarily mean what you think, Mariana.
That's a good one. So what does BWS mean?
Ah, look, she's still on the train, folks. She's picked up this magazine that somebody left at the club from 1976. BWS means Bridge World Standard, which is a version of Standard American. This is my understanding of it. I'm pretty sure I'm right here. In the Bridge World magazine, if they're talking about Standard, they're assuming the version of Standard American that is commonly expected in the Bridge World magazine itself. So if they're having an article about things like Master Solvers Club, and Richard does it sometimes, you'll see it, Richard Solomon, you'll see him doing it on the site, they'll have a problem and they'll put it to all of his panelists. Well, that used to be called Master Solvers Club. You'd have some problem hand and you'd send it in and he'd get all the opinions of all the panels. Now, of course, they'd never bloody well agree on anything. It just goes to show you got all these expert players and they'd all have different answers. Michael is famous for saying that he'd get a problem and he'd say, unanimous, surely everybody will agree. And I don't think in the history of the world, I don't think there's ever been one where it's been unanimous. There's always at least one person that would do something else. So Bridgeworld Standard was the system that they were assumed to play if it was a bidding problem.
Okay. Do we have a New Zealand World Standard?
No.
Not really now, do we?
We never did.
Oh.
No, we never did.
In terms of lessons, if we were to have a standard, do all clubs teach ACOL?
No.
So some clubs teach Standard American?
Yeah, they do. Actually, well, come on, how about somebody sends us an email and tell us what system your club teaches? Some of you might not know if you're not helping with the lessons. You're not one of Mariana's little band of helpers, the seven dwarfs, happy and sleepy and dopey, and you know, that's a lot.
I have four helpers at lessons. I'm really, really spoiled. So,
you
anyway, put me right here, Martin. But I think they still do the Gorin system down that way.
Who knows? Send it in, bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. Tell us what system your club teaches. Because it's going to obviously be the system that's mostly played at your club in most of their sessions. So any system that you teach at your beginner's lessons is a big impact. It's going to affect your club for years to come.
True that.
Get your gumboots on. We're going down to the pond with Kermit.
Phenomena. Phenomena. Phenomena.
Hey, we're at the pond and we've got the froggettes and the toad.
Hi there.
Just one kiss would turn me into a handsome prince, probably.
You reckon that's all it would take?
Well, maybe not.
And a rub of the tummy. Got some takers for that, have we? Let us know, britzoneshuffle@gmail.com.
Okay, I think we should change the subject.
Wondering what the capacity of the inbox of britzoneshuffle@gmail is, you know? You don't want to lose any because of an overfull inbox.
We shall soon find out. Okay.
Just talking again a bit more about defence, and it was just a topic that came up talking with a couple of fine up-and-coming players and just about signals on defence. And there is different methods that people use, and no method is perfect, because if it was, everyone would do it. I would suggest that whatever carding method you use it consistently. So I'm just thinking, I remember years ago, I said the carding was that I would tell partner what they needed to know. The problem with that is that both sides couldn't see exactly the same thing, so weren't 100% sure what the other one wanted to know or what the other one thought that you wanted to know, if that makes sense. I normally play count, and sometimes, like for all defenders, I wish partner could tell me something else, but at least I know that I can rely on what partner is telling me and can use that in my deductions about the hand. But if you're not sure about what partner is telling you, then your signal sort of becomes meaningless. Unless you've got very clear guidelines about when you change from, say, if your standard thing is upside down counting attitude, unless you've got really clear guidelines about when that doesn't apply, I think it's best to just stick to upside down counting attitude or whichever one you choose.
And you're absolutely right. Whatever you choose, there will be a hand where you think, God, I wish we were playing something else. I wish we were playing suit preference, or I wish we were playing something.
Yeah.
I don't want to pitch one of these, and I don't want to pitch one of those. And if I pitch one of those, it's not going to be clear. It's difficult. Even just such a simple thing as saying whether you should play standard attitude or reverse attitude. Well, that's just fine if you've got the 2 and the 8. But if you've got the 9 and the 8,
difficult. It makes it a bit difficult.
You wish you were playing the other one just because of the cards you've got.
I mean, even with carding or leading or whatever, you think, well, if I lead this one, it's not very clear to partner whether it's low or high. But if you transgress from your partnership agreement and do something completely different, that's not going to make it clearer for partner at all.
I have heard a brilliant suggestion for how you can coach. So when you want to play a small card in a suit, but you've only got big ones, right? When it's your turn to play, you drop one of your cards on the floor and then you say, oh, sorry, it's a small one.
Oh,
Barry Jones. Barry Jones. My goodness.
Well, I know that Barry would never do that, and neither would some of the listeners out there. There is something that's quite similar that is people do unconsciously, and that is when they know that it's going to be unclear, they play it very slowly. I know that people don't do this on purpose, but it's something that you got to look out for, I think, that you don't do it by accident. The example of this would be, I know some people lead the top of nothing. So when they've got 3 small, they lead the top one. I've seen the count being cleared up by when they play the second one and they play it slowly. That means they started with 3 and not 2.
Oh,
what irritates me, if we're going to talk about things, is when the card they're playing is obviously going to matter in that suit and they want to signal something else. So they hesitate for ages and it's almost like they're saying, there's a signal coming, partner. There's a signal coming.
Ding, ding, ding. What's the space?
And I'm absolutely sure that none of us do anything that's ever irritating to anybody.
No, I think the clearest thing that you've said today is UDCA, upside down, yeah, count and attitude. So when that's written in the online, you know, when you're playing online, when it's written in, a couple of people look at it, I'm pretty sure, and say, wonder what that is. Wonder if I should ask. I myself, a couple of years back, actually Googled it. And I was like, oh, is that what that means? I don't want to ask. Who asks?
Well, you know what? I always ask about stuff. I don't mind looking silly. I ask what a bid means and they just tell me the name of a convention. I always say, I don't know what that means. Can you explain? Well, I mean, if somebody says Landy, well, I think they play it different in Harborough than they do in Twizel, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, just tell me what the convention means.
Bridge and Twizel, come on.
But isn't there Landy and Multilandy as well? So could it be thought of being the same? It sounds like another subject.
That does sound like another subject. We started talking about clarity of signals. Now, another situation is that when people try to combine 2 signals into 1 card, so they're going to give attitude, but they're also going to give suit preference.
Yep.
With, again, it just becomes so unclear that it loses any value. So at least if you play a simple system like a count card or an attitude card, it may not be exactly what you want to know, but at least you know what it is and you can work with that bit of information.
Thing is, you can't do 2 things at once with 1 card. That's probably the rule. You can only do 1 thing.
No, even if you're a woman who can multitask, you can't do that.
I'm going to tell my favourite story about signalling because I know I've told it before on the Bridge Zone. We've been going for so long now that half the listeners might have forgotten it and Pam might not have heard it.
Hang on, wait. Ding, ding, ding. Spoiler alert. Now you can go.
Okay, so it was a team match, actually. We were playing in a teams match, and we were all intermediates. It was so long ago. The one who was De Klerk got back and said, at one point, the opponents had showed out, which she was playing spades, and one of them showed out. And she said to their partner, Zach, doing everything exactly right here, what are your discards? And she said, well, she discarded a heart. She said, yeah, but what does it mean? What does it mean? And the person looked at her like she was blankly, like she was insane, and said, well, she hasn't got any spades.
That's a clear signal, isn't
At that point, she stopped asking. It didn't seem like they had a clear. I don't think they.
remember one of my first tournaments. I think it was an intermediate tournament, and I think it was in Hauora, the famous Hauora, that's only an hour south of me. Someone asked me what my partner's bid meant, and I said, I don't know, I'm just a bunny.
Yeah. Oh,
And that was sufficient.
well,
no, yeah.
it was the truth.
You may recall when I was playing with Ev Hurley, one of my fave people, when we were playing at the club in Palmy, they said, oh, what's your signal? And I said, I don't know until the next card played what it means. She put her glasses down on her nose, on the tip of her nose. She said, Mariana, you just need to tell them what the system is, not what the answer is. I was like, oh, okay. But I just thought, well, I don't know until she plays the next one, whether it's a high one or a low one. I just have no idea. So I was trying my best not to lead them down the wrong path, but yeah. And that's when I found out you don't need to give people the answer. You just need to tell them what system you play. Never forgotten that.
I can just imagine Evelyn with her glasses on her nose, looking over the top.
Yeah,
Yes.
like,
So if
right.
listeners are wanting to know what the best system is, we don't know.
That's the answer. We don't know. But I tell you what, if you're talking about defense, you can't go past looking at the auction, looking at dummy, and having a think about what's been played so far. That beats most systems.
Very good. That was a good chat.
I'm just summing up about that discussion. If you've got an agreement, stick to your agreement, make it clear, and at least the partner has some piece of reliable information on which to work on. If you start mixing up signals or they're unclear, they become useless. If it's not absolutely clear to partner what you're doing, it's pretty useless.
I'd just emphasize that make it clear thing. If you want to pitch a high one and you've got the nine and the eight, well, play the bloody nine. Partner probably will figure out the eight, but it doesn't cost you to play the nine. Make your signals as clear as you can. If I'm playing with you, treat me like I'm a complete idiot and I need help. I
I
want to be
didn't need
spoon.
that piece of advice. I was already there. I was. Hey,
It's
Barry,
very
we are going to have a game, aren't we?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
We
oh, you'll be
are.
good at treating me like a complete idiot. I'm sure, Pam. That would be.
A couple of slaps over the table won't go amiss either. Alrighty. Hey, thanks, everyone.
Join us next week at the Lily Pad.
With Pam Livingston, Bridge Coach.
See you.
Phenomena.
I've got a question that I want to talk about. And I think everybody comes up with this problem at some stage. So opposition open, and you actually have a decent hand, but one that you can't quite describe. Don't have five card suit, don't have enough to say one no trump or have a hold, don't have the right hand to double, and you've got some points, probably more than opening value points, and you have to pass. And you think, oh gosh, shall I make stuff up? No, last time I did that, I got in trouble. So, rah, 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 rah. Can't double with that rubbish.
You decide on a disciplined pass.
What do you call it? A smooth pass.
So the good news is the auction isn't over yet, though.
Then partner gets involved. So you get involved, get all excited, and then it sort of stops. And then they say, but you were a passed hand. How often have you heard that? They're like, well, I didn't have anything to frickin'
But
bid.
now that partner's bid something and I've got support, it's trickier when you don't have support, really. So a partner bids
True.
something, there you are sitting there with your 14 count or whatever. And of course, we all know that these days, your opponents, some of them bid on tram tickets. That hand's opened on a 10 count and this hand's responded with four. And you've got 26 points between you and you can't get anywhere.
Past hand bidding, Barry. You got any pearls of wisdom there?
I think when you're a passed hand, a lot of people will play that if partner overcalls and you change the suit, that's forcing for a round. But when you're a past hand, that doesn't apply because partner will feel that they can pass your bid there because, hey, you didn't bid in the first place. And the other thing is, if you'd had a good hand with a five-card suit, you probably would have overcalled the first time around. So the only really forcing bid is bidding the opponent's suit. And even the dimmest of partners will usually bid something if you bid the opponent's suit.
Very true. I didn't know we had dip functions.
Not referring to anyone in particular, but you know what I mean.
Hang on, I'm just going to switch to high beam.
I mean, it seems to be in general use that a cue bid of the opponent's suit promises support for partner's suit. If you're a past hand, sometimes you don't have a lot of options. The only thing you can do that will really force is cue bidding the opponent's suit. Give it a whirl. If anybody does it and their partner passes, well, you know, shoot them. I mean, usually the reason for passing with a decent hand is because you've got quite a lot of whatever the heck they've opened ahead of you. Those are the only real hand that gives you a problem in how to bid. Yeah, this discussion with your partner, Mariana.
No, I haven't.
I haven't asked the question yet.
Oh.
if they open on your left and your partner overcalls,
yeah, and
it goes past to you and you bid one no trump, how strong do you think that is? Have you had that discussion with your partner? How many points would that show? So partner's just made a simple one-level overcall and you've bid one no trump. How many points do you think you need for that? And I don't know whether there's a right or wrong answer. I'm going to tell you what I think, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's right.
9 to 12, maybe? 9 to 11? Most people would think 6 to 9, but that can't be right. You'd have to be a little bit stronger, wouldn't you?
I think so, but if you make it, say you made it 9 to 11, what are you going to do with 12? Are you going to jump to 2 no-trumps and find partners overcalled on an 8 count with 5 to the king, queen, jack or something? I actually think that a response of 1 no-trump there shows quite a good hand. Nobody twisted your arm and made you bid. I actually think it should show an opening hand. That's what I reckon.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that disagree with me. Let's hope we hear from them. I know it's an old answer. I know I've said it a million times before. You know what I'm going to say, don't you, Mariana?
Partnership agreement. Yeah. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, you've got it. You've got it. So I think it does depend on partnership agreement. But if you are tending to overcall on a good suit at the one level, if you've got a good suit, you want to get it in. You know, if you've got king, queen, jack to 5 or something, and you can overcall it at the one level, you really want to get it in, don't you? And that's fine. But all of a sudden, it means that responding 1 no-trump with 6 to 9 when partner might only have 6 to 9 is a bit of a dangerous exercise. If you're going to overcall with less values, you need to make your 1 no-trump response a bit chunkier.
A bit stronger. Yeah, yeah, true.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
G'day, Judge Julie. Welcome to another week at the Bridge Zone.
Mariana's got a real-life situation. This really happened. We haven't made it up.
Talking about leads, opening lead, and what happens when they simultaneously lead out of turn. Are the correct leader, like, oh, sorry. However, one lead with the card face down, one lead with the card face up.
So the person that led with the card face up, that is the one we're going to look at. If that was out of turn, then the rules around opening lead out of turn are going to apply, which I'll go through in a minute.
Yep.
If the opening leader is the one that led it face up, then that is the lead that counts. And since it was the opening leader's lead, that is all fine. It just stands. So if it's a lead out of turn, then there's the director's going to come and go blah at you because, first of all, you can accept the lead out of turn. And if you do, then that becomes the lead and you can say whether you will be dummy or whether dummy will go down now and you'll play to the trick. The declarer will play to the trick second, but dummy will be seen at that point. So if you accept the opening lead, you choose whether you are dummy or not if you are declarer.
Yep.
Okay. You can not accept the opening lead, in which case the correct person will be on lead. And if they are, then you can demand or forbid the lead of the suit that the person led out of turn.
Okay.
So there's things around penalty card, basically the same as when you revoke. Whenever you have a penalty card, the declarer says all the stuff involved around that. Now, declarer might elect not to enforce any lead penalty, in which case they don't accept the lead, the opening leader will lead, and then the card will be on the table as a major penalty card. Whenever there is a major penalty card on the table and the partner of the person who has the penalty card in front of them is on lead, then the declarer has the options of accepting the lead, of demanding the lead of the suit, forbidding the lead of a suit, or just not caring. So that means, for example, if the ace of spades was led incorrectly, Vera said, no, just have the correct hand lead it. They can lead what they like. They led the ace of clubs, and the ace of spades is still on the table. Declarer still gets the lead penalties on the next trick. And then on the next trick, until that card is picked up or it is played. The director's going to stand there and twiddle their thumbs until that penalty card disappears as a rule, unless they get very busy.
Wow.
So there's quite a bit around penalty cards. Interesting. But one of the things about the lead out of turn is if someone is that keen to make that lead, perhaps you don't want to accept it. And the other theory is if someone doesn't even know who the right lead is, then maybe you should accept it.
that's really helpful, isn't it?
Well, I thought, can't you pick?
It's like the long and winding road.
You either should accept it or you shouldn't.
That's exactly no use to me. People frequently ask, what should I do? And you say, well.
Do they? Really?
I was waiting for the pearls of wisdom. And what I got was.
You got two of them.
You got the la-da-da-da-da-da. Well, thankfully, the right person that was on lead led face up.
Yeah. So if both sides led simultaneously face up, I'm pretty certain that the correct lead, who should be the opening leader, is the one that is played, and the other one has got a major penalty card. And that is only because it's not really an area covered specifically by the law that I'm aware of. But in all situations where things happen at the same time, in general, it falls back on where the correct place should be.
Bloody Nora, Barry. Are we done and dusted with leads now?
Yeah, no,
I don't know.
About leads. Send us a question about something else. Anything else but leads would be good.
How many tournaments are you playing in the next few weeks?
True, I'm just trying to figure out Auckland Congress.
We'll be looking forward to seeing everybody.
Alrighty. Well, thank you, Judge.
Okay.
Any last thoughts, Barry?
No, I just want to get off the lead subject. I'm over it. I'm never going to lead again. Well, maybe I will.
Oh, so I'll tell you what, the easy way to be over it, always lead face down with your opening lead, and you save yourself a lot of problems.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Clink, clink. All right, catch you later.
Okay, bye.
As promised from last week, here's Peter Holland from Across the Ditch. His first segment on bridge probabilities made easy.
Do you ever look at suits like this, where you've got king, queen, 10, 9 to 5, opposite 4 low, you're missing the ace, jack. You're like, all right, let's lead up to the king, and you lose to the ace. And the next time you get down to the south hand, you lead again. And you're like, should I put in the queen? Should I finesse? Who's got the jack? I don't know. And you just choose something. Or maybe you've got a suit like this, where you're missing the ace, the queen, and the 9. You lead up to the jack, and it loses to the queen. You get back to your south hand. You lead up towards the king and it loses to the ace. You get back to the north hand. You then lead low towards the 10 and the 8. You haven't seen the 9. You're like, all right, do I go to the 10 or do I go to the 8? And you just choose one. Or do you? I want to just give you some knowledge that you can sort of use on a broad spectrum of different suit combinations without actually having to memorize every individual suit combination. And this all stems from a saying that you've already probably heard, 8 ever, 9 never. But I want to flesh it out so that you can use it on suit combinations like that and have the probabilities in your favor and just win extra tricks just because you know the probabilities without knowing every single suit combination. And there's not a lot of memory work for this as well. So this is nice and simple. So first of all, for people that haven't heard of 8 ever, 9 never, let's imagine we've got 8 cards and we're missing the queen. We've got something like ace, king, jack, 10, and we've got 8 of them. Or we've got 9 cards, still missing the queen. Should we finesse the queen or should we play for the queen to drop? Now, the saying here, eight ever, nine never, is talking about whether or not you should finesse. So with eight cards, it suggests that you should finesse the queen. Whereas if you've got nine cards, it wants you to play for the drop. Now, what you can also do is expand this up to 10 and 11 cards and also down to 7 and 6 cards. So there's a common pattern here that you'll see. So first of all, if you're curious, with the 8 ever, 9 never, never's like a bit of an overstatement here. While you should play for the queen to the drop and not finesse, the drop's only 2% better. Now, 2%'s a lot in the long run, but if you've got some good information to sway you away from that, you should take that. Whereas choosing should you play for the queen to drop in an 8-card fit versus finesse, that's actually 19% better to actually finesse. You basically always take the finesse. You need really good information to sway away from that. Now, I'm not expecting you to remember all these percentages, but I want you to try and remember what's generally better. If we're ever playing for the drop, it's only a small percentage increase. So if you've got some good information, you can sway away from it. If you're choosing to finesse, it's usually significantly better, and you should go for that in those cases.
We're going to continue with Pete's discussion on bridge possibilities made easier next week. And my last question, which is, how many conventions are there when partner opens a week two? And which do you think is the best convention to see how strong partner is? The normal one, Ogus. What else is there?
I mean, I don't think it's that common because these days a lot of people don't play week twos. They play a multi-two and the responses are different, of course. Responses are just to show if people open like a multi-two diamond, which is likely to be a week two. If you're interested in how strong partner is, they've usually got a week two. They usually haven't got the 20 to 22 option, so they bid two no trumps. And the only responses you have is to say which major you've gotten with your minimum or maximum. Doesn't actually talk about suit quality or anything, which August, of course, does, doesn't it? I think these days some people just play that if they are playing week twos, two no trumps just says if your minimum, just rebid your suit. If your maximum, bid a feature, which is either a card outside or it's a singleton or something like that. I often wonder how they get on with that. If it can be a singleton or it can be a card outside, it's quite important to know which, I would have thought. I know that isn't helpful, Marianne, but I don't know whether it's such a great way to play.
Good luck to everybody that's playing bridge this weekend. I am heading off over to the Mount to have a game, so I've got a weekend full of bridge this weekend, Barry. Mount Whanganui Saturday and Hamilton on Sunday, obviously. Andrew's going to be at the Drags up at Murrimurri, so if you're up there, check them out. I think they're running back draft this week. Biohazard's having a rest.
Are you going to take the bath all the way to the mount, or are you going to take the Falcon?
No, bath's going.
Okay, well, I hope they've got hot and cold running water over there. That'll be great.
Okay, everyone, catch you later.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this Free FM podcast. If you want to hear more content like this, you can support Free FM via Patreon. Head to patreon.com/freefm89 to find out more.